it's time to stop catering to the status quo, thinking that will somehow help us, and instead turn our attention to the least of these, as we hear it referred to by Jesus, those with the least power and the least visibility and least resources, and cater to them, and move out the people of power that are hurting the people they're supposed to care for.
Hello, my name is Clay Boykin, and I am in search of the new compassionate male. I believe in the midst of these incredible times of change, a new compassionate male is emerging as the new archetype. And this podcast is intended to give voice to both men and women on the overarching topic of compassion consciousness in men.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis. And today, and in search of the new compassionate male, I get to produce this episode along with the founder, Clay Boykin. Hello, Clay. Would you introduce our guest, Susan, please?
Hi, Dennis. Absolutely. Susan Cottrell is with us today. I met Susan in March of 2019 here in Austin, Texas, at the New Story Festival. We actually had booths right next to each other. Susan's got a powerful story, a heartbreaking story, and an inspiring story. And I'd love to pick up wherever Susan would like in that. And gee, we've got so much to talk about.
Gosh, yes. And because this is, Susan, don't you see that this is a time of new stories?
Yes.
That we're all telling new stories and re-seeing our stories. Just in the past 20 years, when we've seen new stories being told and new ways of relating, it's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. And I look at the past year of a pandemic shutdown. I can't imagine anything else that would have shut down the world like it did. And it's time to hear the stories that have been incubating and that people haven't had a chance to tell, and listen to the stories that have been being told, but people haven't been listening to. So, yeah, I think it's a time of change. We've been in an embryo now for all this time, and I hope we come out listening to the stories that are being told and not just go back to status quo. That would be the worst outcome I could see.
Amen. So what's changed for you? What's changing in your story and in the advocacy that you've been doing in your life, Susan?
Well, so in Freed Hearts, I had been doing a lot of writing, a lot of traveling, a lot of producing of content. And this last time, this last year, I think has been sharp focusing, producing the content that we need to get out there to continue to bring in the stories of people. A man in Germany who just wrote me about his situation with the priest there, pastor they call him, but it's the German Catholic Church, mm-hmm. and the whole response to the Vatican. And how he's saying, you have got to listen to our stories. Like the Pope was saying, or this pastor was saying, you know, well, we've got to be understanding of the church's position and the bind they're in with the Vatican. Like, no, you have to understand our position and our families that you've destroyed and our lives that you have crushed. And so all of that to say, I think it's time to stop catering to the status quo, thinking that will somehow help us, and instead turn our attention to the least of these, as we hear it referred to by Jesus, those with the least power and the least visibility and least resources, and cater to them, and move out the people of power that are hurting the people they're supposed to care for.
I love that. I've got a question. You mentioned Freed Hearts.
Yes.
Now, that's a blog and
It's a whole kit and caboodle. It's a whole nonprofit that we have.
Okay.
And there's several elements. There's a blog. There's print content in the form of books. And there's video content with the online courses that we offer. And we have lots of YouTube videos as well. And then we have live. I travel and speak till this past year, and I will resume again. And we have our podcast that just came out. We just started, I don't know, several months ago, really.
Really? And is it called Freed Hearts Podcast?
Freed Hearts Podcast, yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. And your YouTube videos get a couple of hits, I understand.
Yes.
Like millions of viewers on it, literally.
Yes, yes. And my TED Talk, too.
And your TED Talk. That's right. That's right. I was seeing that. What is the general topic, the essence? Can you tell us about that? What started Freed Hearts? And
yeah, so we were in the Evangelical Church, the conservative, non-affirming church. We didn't realize they were non-affirming because there was no reason to yet. We were there for 20 years, and then our daughter came out. First as bi and then as gender non-binary. And we're like, okay, we know how this is going to go down at the church. We just knew. Nobody had gone through it that we witnessed, but we knew. And
hey, Susan, hold on. I want to ground this in history, in her story, in their story. So what year was this?
It was 2010. When Annie first came out.
Wow. See, things, this is the, people won't, unless we know that it was, what was 2010 like at that time and the atmosphere, which is so much different in many ways than in 20, I mean, yes, certainly there are the underlying, the underlying traps that are still there, but there has been some progress in the awareness during that time that she had to go through that was even harder than the child that is going and family today.
That's right. That's right. But I would say that overall the culture has gotten more affirming, but the extreme the ones who are non-affirming, they wouldn't consider themselves extreme at all. But the non-affirming element has, in a lot of ways, dug in their heels. Many have realized, hey, this is nothing like Christ. This is nothing like what we're supposed to be doing. And they've really come a long way. But many have dug in their heels. And politically, many on the far right have dug in their heels. So it's, yes, the culture has come a very long way. And we become more dichotomized. So it's really an interesting situation.
All right. Now, so please, yeah. Please, I apologize for stopping there and that thing. But all right. So we're in 2010, we're going out. And the conversation that was happening within your family was?
Yeah. Well, so Annie said, I've resisted it. I've tried not to be, I've prayed about it, but it won't go away. And I'm resisting claiming it. I don't want to say I'm bisexual because then I really will be like, then it's a done deal, you know? And so I was helping her resist. I was saying, well, how can I help you? Do we need to get a counselor? Whatever. And I didn't know what I didn't know. And I wish I had known more then, but it was really just a few months that kind of all that just fell apart. She said, I've done all those things. And she moved away. She finished college, moved away, very conservative Christian college, which was the one she chose. But it's
irony much.
Yeah. And she chose it given the place from which we raised her, you know?
Certainly.
Yeah. So, but anyway, she moved to New York and she called me some months later and said, I'm dating women now and I'm more at peace with God than I've ever been.
Oh,
and that to me was all I needed.
Oh.
That was it. Like, if you're at peace with God, I am at peace with God. And so, you know, we just started moving forward from there. But I started researching everything I could. And I remember reading materials and finally just pushing it all aside and saying, there is no love in this. There's no love in this. And I told some friends at church, as women do, you know, we talk to each other and I said, my daughter's come out, blah, 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 she's bisexual. And they said, individual coffees, you know, they said, this is a sin and you can't accept it, which was just mind blowing to me. No, it's the daughter that I fed mashed bananas as a baby. It's the daughter I taught to read. It's the daughter I would give my very life for. It's not a sin. You can't boil this down to a sin that I can't accept. What would it mean not to accept her? You want me to fracture my family over a theology? No, I'm not doing that. I don't see that in Jesus. I don't see that.
Where? Never. Never. There is no place in any of the writings, any of the teachings, any of the place where that would be.
Yeah, absolutely. Except in the religious leaders, whom he's ripped apart. He ripped them apart. And so, okay, if that's your model, it's not a good model. So I continued to grow. I looked for material. I looked for groups. I didn't really find them, so I created them. We connected with a couple of other moms who founded a moms group online that is thriving and going strong. Lots and lots, thousands of moms in there. So we just kept growing, and we have an LGBT group too for people who are just trying to get their feet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as I really tore into the theology of it, I was like, this doesn't hold water at all. None of this holds water. These verses that are supposed slam dunks against this community are not. And mm-hmm. so it all broadened out. When that box opened on LGBTQ, other boxes opened on racism, on genocide of people groups that we don't think are Christian. This country, women, all of the things that has been done in the name of Christianity that have been decimating.
Yep.
So that was an amazing journey that I did not expect. And the door opened for me to go to seminary right at that time too. So I went to seminary and was like, holy smokes.
How in the world did you survive seminary?
it was a progressive seminary.
Okay.
So, welcome. Mm-hmm. And I said in the entrance interview, I said, I am affirming of LGBTQ. I want to be very clear about that. They were like, great, no problem. So, but I was, it was going to be a deal breaker if I could.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, how wonderful, Susan.
It was so wonderful. And the conservative seminaries, they kind of lie to you. They just teach you how to finesse scripture in a way to maintain the hierarchy. That's really mm-hmm. what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And in my progressive seminary, it was about deconstructing the hierarchy. That's night and day.
Yeah. And, you know, when Clay and I, we're talking with a lot of men, and we're talking about the woundedness of being wounded by the patriarchy, and the patriarchy that is being served by both men and women for whatever different reasons that there are to preserve this. Yeah. So we're looking for men and working with men who are, I say we're working with men, Clay is working with men. I get to be with Clay in this process of finding the compassion within ourselves, being able to communicate with head and heart so that the people, you said that the moms at the churches were getting the men. What were you finding the echoes within the male community or the men that identified as the people that identified as men in the Christian communities?
You know, there is so much pressure on men in those groups to maintain the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
I just read an article in the New Yorker, just came through, and I was trying to remember the man's name. I'm not sure, but you can easily find it, where he talked about toxic masculinity and the cost to men. And he talked about his own father, who was, you know, beer drinking, staying in the garage, you know, with racist, homophobic, sexist mm-hmm. jokes and all of that. Conversation, talking about, oh, I'd rape her if I could, you know, and just horrible, horrible things. And that was the community that he grew up in. And, you know, he was estranged from his father. He got away as far as he could, for as long as he could. But finally, years later, connected with him, and his father said, you know, the pressure to be that kind of man is just, it's overwhelming. I didn't really have a choice, I didn't think. And his son was appalled by that. He had no idea that his father was going along with that patriarchy. But it's so oppressive from the beginning. You know, if a girl falls, trips, we say, oh, come here, honey. And a boy trips, we're like, shake it off. And, you know, it starts from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what I've been learning over this past several years, and of course, this year with the podcast, which is a year old now,
my
sense is that this generation right now, the young men that are growing up, the people of our age even, are doing our best to stop that cycle. You know, I can look back at my father, and in so many ways through life, whether I was before I was conscious of it,
yeah,
I'm not going to be that way. And I hear this drumbeat of here and no further. Jerry, a couple of days ago, Jerry Tao was talking about that within the Hispanic community that he grew up in. And
machismo that was part of the process.
Yeah. And the desire to break the cycle. So the consciousness of breaking the cycle sure seems to be out there.
Yeah.
It's not overnight, but
no. Do you think, Susan, you know, in now I'm going to talk broad generalities here, but do you think when we dig down to this place where the knot is so tight, where it's so hard, is it going to take that generation to die off, or is there a way? I mean, we're trying to look at this geologically, you know, and also humanity, how long we've been around, because this is a tight knot. This is a holding on for dear life to the last vestiges of white supremacy, of white male patriarch, of what we're, this is holding on for all it's worth.
Yes. Yes, it is. I mean, that's a million-dollar question, I guess. I mean, back in the 60s, remember the age of Aquarius and all?
73. I'm the elder in on this podcast, so baby, I remember.
You know, and they were really, it's the dawning of the age of Aquarius. We have a whole new world opening up, and I believe that's been happening. That was 50 years ago. Yeah, I know. And so I think we've been in the throes of these birth pangs, as you call them,
yes,
for some time now. Mm-hmm. And then you see some of the very conservative people that are just doubling down. So I think it'd be okay if we waited for that knot to die off, but they have children and, you know, children's children who have been raised up in it too. So it's a,
to find value in the patriarchy, that there is some value in maintaining that little bit, because they cannot see that their synergy is the only way forward, that 1 + 1 has to be greater than 2. It's not a zero-sum game.
And not just benefit from the patriarchy, which there certainly is, but exorbitant cost not to comply. If you just don't have a favorite sports team, you get beaten up and shoved in your locker. I mean, you know, it's they get you in that patriarchy. I'm talking to two men here, mm-hmm. and all those others.
Thank you.
You know, they get you in there one way or the other, and by enticing you or bullying you or both. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard. Women, we're oppressed in other ways, but we don't have that pressure that men have to man up. like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a horrible burden.
You know, I've had the privilege to work with an organization called Gender Equity and Reconciliation International. They're now 29 years. They worked with Desmond Tutu. They've been to the Vatican. They've done work with the United Nations. I had the opportunity to support some of that work. And the essence of where they begin is the recognition that both men and women are wounded.
Yes.
And that as we see that with one another and we begin to hear that firsthand, not comparing wounds,
right,
but recognizing that we're wounded. You know, I stood up in one of our, you know, sessions when we were talking about woundedness, and I said, I'm the privileged white Western male. I've got everything going for me. And I do. I'm privileged. But let me share a little bit about my wound.
Right.
For educational purposes, not to woe is me, but just to say, look, I'm wounded too. And afterwards, it happened, two or three women separately said, gosh, I never thought about it like that.
Yes.
And vice versa.
Yes.
For me to sit there and to listen to a woman for the first time in her life, express what had happened to her.
Yes.
Not only with women expressing it, but in a mixed group. And to go through it, there's an alchemy that takes place where we begin to see each other.
And it will come through story. I do believe what you're just
saying.
Our story.
Yes.
We have to convey our stories to each other. We have to listen to our stories. And probably that's my biggest gripe about the religious element and the right, you know, the conservative element. I don't want to say the wrong words here, but they don't really listen to your story. If your story doesn't fit what they already believe, they just discount it. Well, then how are you ever going to learn and grow? How is that in any way humility?
And can you convince them that belief is fear-based?
Yeah.
Can you step outside of yourself, Susan, and say that your daughter didn't come out and she, you know, identified as heterosexual and all your children were completely down, right down the line, right within the spectrum and that? How would you have opened your heart?
That's a great question. I mean, that's the thing that did open my heart. So it's very hard to see. I hope to God that I would have. I hope to God that I would not continue down this path. And I think if the last 4 years didn't send a wake-up call, then there's no wake-up to be done. I would hope that I would have observed and said, you know, something's rotten here. This is not working.
Yeah.
But I'm amazed at the number of people who just keep hobbling along. So I honestly don't know. You always think I would have protected the Germans in Nazi Germany. I mean, the Jews in Nazi Germany.
Well, yeah.
But would you have? I don't know.
Yeah, I know exactly. The feeling I had, I remember I have this this image of myself that I would, in a sense of my wife and best friend, that I would protect her as an instinct.
Yes.
And we were on an escalator. We were on an escalator in an airport and a bang happened. Something fell over, whatever, but it was a bang. And my first instinct, I moved the other way and I went, crap. Here I thought all this time I had this story in my head that, and what was the first thing I did?
Well, and one of the things, and sorry, I don't mean to do any bashing here, but
bash away, but help us. We're in this together.
Part of the culture, but one of the things that's drummed into men in this way is that you better be able to fix it, and if you can't, you gotta run. It's essentially fight or flight. And we noticed that, that's what you did. You thought, here's something overwhelming, I'm out of here. And it was instinctual. And we noticed that we worked with kids with cancer for 10 years, my husband and I. And in all the families, in every single family, the mother was there.
Yeah.
In a lot of the families, as soon as the diagnosis came, the dad was gone. Now, it didn't help the family for him to leave at all, but he couldn't take it. He would fight. I can't fight this cancer. I can't change it. Okay, I'm out of here. And it's flight. And so they're steeped in fear. That was my conclusion on all of
this.
This
is our learnings, Clay. You get that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And women are not. Women are trained in a dance. They have to dance with the men in their lives to get anything done. They have to dance with all the rules they didn't set up. And Black people the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Other people of color. You have to dance with the rules that you never made up, never agreed to. You just were born into them.
What is it, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers?
Yeah.
What great dancers they were, except she did it backwards and in high heels.
Yes. Yeah.
But Clay, you know, this is what in our work, Susan, and the work that Clay's doing and the work that Clay is teaching me, being beside him as we're working together, is that when we work on compassion as an active principle in our lives, we can begin to heal that and begin to be part of so that when that happens, because that's that fight or flight. That place is that there is a wound or a blockage. How would you phrase it, Clay? That prevents us from being able to get. But compassion has a softening effect.
Well, let me try this,
please.
What I'm learning along the way in my work with the organization, Karen Armstrong's organization, Charter for Compassion.
You mentioned that. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. And what I've learned through their compassion integrity training that they provide is that compassion is part of our DNA. It's innate. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be nurtured.
Yes.
And what I'm choose, yeah, it's got to be nurtured. And what I'm choosing to believe is that all this pressure that's happening right now, the last 4 years, the pandemic, everything, that spark of compassion within men, there's a burning there.
Yes.
And I think they're beginning to realize that that's not a negative thing, that that's the divine energy. That's the spark of light. And that, and rather than spend all the energy pushing it down, embrace it and integrate it and move forward.
Yes.
And grow. And that's the divine masculine, the divine feminine, however you want to call it, the solar, yes, lunar, you know, that integration. It's not move from the head to the heart. We've heard that so many times, and guys say, what, leave my head behind?
Right.
No. This is an integration.
Yes. Yes.
And to the point of it, Howard Teich made this point. He was talking about the solar masculine, the solar feminine, the lunar masculine or male and the lunar female. And he said to us, the lunar leads and the solar executes. Mm-hmm. And so to your point, the execute, we're you know, us guys, generality, we're cut off at the neck, you know, we're working in our head. So it's, you know, lead, you know, fix it. And I didn't, when he first said it, I didn't go for that at first. But then I went back to my Marine Corps days and said, absolutely. Leadership is from the heart. We have to integrate that or we're not a complete person. We're not a complete male. We're not a complete leader.
Right.
The integration of head and heart.
Yeah.
It's been said so many times throughout history, isn't it? Hasn't it? But we kind of don't really hear it. I love what you said. You're kind of softening me to more to the plight that men are in, that they didn't choose, that they didn't sign up for, that's just the rules they were given.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to build on what you're saying there.
Please.
Now, I'm going to make another generality. In general, it's my belief that when a young girl is growing up, that she has a different relationship with her mother than the young boy with his father. That there is a dialogue that happens between mother and daughter where she's learning to speak from head and heart. And there's this practice time.
Yes.
That didn't happen with daddy and me. Daddy loved me, but there wasn't that connection. There wasn't this struggle to speak and to understand. And so what we're doing in our circles, in our men's circles, in a place where there's no judgment,
yeah,
no one's calling anybody out, is we're practicing.
Yeah.
Practicing connecting the heart to the mouth.
Right.
And learning that language. And as we're learning it, we're then now beginning to be able to integrate it.
Yeah.
That's a long, slow process.
And we found, Susan, you know, over our lives anyway, we found that in general, women are more emotionally intelligent than men. Mm-hmm. That's and just as a generality, mm-hmm, that if you were to put them on a scale, but that's a learned thing.
Yes.
It's something that we can grow. This gives us an opportunity to say, how do we grow our emotional intelligence so that we can meet men and women and people on the entire spectrum?
Yes.
At a higher level, but that's our work to do.
Yes.
That's our work, that we have to be willing to say, how do I grow myself emotionally? How do I, all right, if I want to grow myself intellectually, I can go and do brain games and I can go and do the work. Well, Clay, you've been seeing it through the Charter for Compassion and Gender Equity of the ways that we can grow ourselves emotionally.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's so well put. You know, I kind of jokingly say, but there's a serious vein of truth in it, on what Dennis was saying, that yes, women tend to be more emotionally intelligent.
Sure.
And us guys are got some catch up. And the women aren't going to come down here to meet us on our level.
Mm.
So and that's work. That's work that men have got to do with men.
Yes.
And it's possible. And there's, you know, men's organizations that work to break into the guy to get him into his heart.
Yeah.
There's the approach that I'm taking with our men's circle, that there's a whole population of men that are in their heart already.
Yes.
And they're stuck.
Yes.
And so we work from the inside out to help them.
Stuck.
I'm sorry?
How are they stuck?
Oh, gosh. Well, one example. They've gone through dark night of the soul. They've been in the ditch. They've gone through their recovery program, and they're looking for something a little bit more positive, not to leave their recovery program because it served a purpose. They're looking for something a bit more positive, maybe more spiritual, but they equate spirituality with religion, and they got burned on organized religion, so they're not going to go back there. And they can speak really pretty deep with their partner or their spouse,
yes,
but there's still another piece there that they can't go into. Yes. So they've got to go speak with another man.
Yes.
However, we're trained not to trust each other. And so we're stuck, and we are festering, and we are literally dying. And or we're killing somebody else.
Yes. Yes.
Because we can't get that, figure that out. Yes. And in some ways, I'm defining myself.
Yeah.
So.
It's very lonely for me.
It is.
Susan, I remember when I was growing up, feeling I would look at other men and I would hear that, and I would hear the way men, masculinity was described, and I would go, oh my God, I am the one screwed up person. I am not like
right,
what I'm seeing out there as described as, that's mighty much a man.
Right.
And I'm going, that's not me. And I'm going, what is the matter with, and there was no model.
But given the opportunity And I stumbled on it because, you know, this is what I needed. I figured if I needed to figure out how to trust another man, to learn from other men, that there's other guys out there. And sure enough, and given the opportunity and a safe place, it is possible. And Dennis, you and I have witnessed it
over and over.
Men nurturing men.
It goes back to what you said, Susan, earlier, is that it is in the DNA. It is not something, it doesn't have to be created. It's not something that has to, it is waiting there. Yes. It may be a dim flame, but it's there. It's baked in.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for those, if it's not there, it means you're a sociopath.
Exactly. Thank you.
Out of you.
Then there's an actual psychological missing, a gene missing.
Right. Yeah.
Mm. Huh. You know, I'm on my circle roll right now, Dennis. Susan, when we gather, you know, we get 15, 18, 20 guys, and we tend to be a bit older. Mm-hmm.
And we a bit wider.
A bit wider, not wiser.
Wider. Yeah. We're a whiter shade of pale.
Yeah.
Not just wider. Okay. You don't have to talk about my weight right now. I realize I'm working on that. I've gotten the COVID-19 as I'm working on. No, but anyway, but go ahead.
All right. Back to my point. We get that group of gentlemen in a circle and add up all of our ages.
Yeah.
There's literally over 1,000 life years of experience sitting right there. And there's something I can learn from Dennis. Dennis can learn from me, vice versa. And it's not necessarily the spoken word. It's sometimes it's the silence. Imagine 20 guys on a topic and there being a pause and no one needing to fill that gap. That's where the magic is.
Astonishing to feel that. Yeah.
It's palpable, the energy that's there. And we go through, literally, we go through life and death together.
I think it's huge what you're doing. It is so needed. I wish every man could be required.
And we are. And the thing is that within these groups, there is the entire political spectrum. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is from left to right and all shades in between, and yeah. that's what gives me hope.
Yes.
And it gives me hope that we're no there because we can meet at a place that is beyond labels.
Yes.
Talking about labels, perfect timing. Outsmart magazine called you the mother of all mama bears.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
I love that. How did you feel about that? What did you think?
I love it. I mean, I have really grown into this role of mother, of, you know, learning through my own five kids that I've had that are, the oldest one's 31 and a half now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But just mothering outward, all the nurturing that I have found for myself, really. I didn't grow up with it. My mother died early. And so I had to kind of come up with my own nurturing. But now that I've really nurtured myself so much, I think, and Rob has nurtured me. He made up for all of my childhood.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we men can bring mothering to women, bring humaning to the process.
Right. And then when your cup is full, then you're able to dispense it to the world. I just feel like I'll never run out of love around me. You know, it's just endless in the universe. And when all you need is your tap open, and then it just flows through you. And I always say God is love looking for a place to happen. God is not looking for the person that deserves to be loved. God is just love. And we can be loved too. and just dispensing it to them.
I go through these phases where, just like what you said about love, and I think, oh, it's like Jell-O. I just can't grasp it. But that's the magic of, for me, in the learning about compassion.
Yeah.
I say it's love in action. Okay, now it's tangible for my male brain.
Yeah.
Okay. And
it is your actions. It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your attitude. And Karen Armstrong is the one who, in her TED Talk, whom I adore.
Yes.
She just said that faith originally was defined as your actions, yes, not your belief system. Well, okay, I can love somebody in action. I can give my friend money to go to this thing she wants to do, but she doesn't have the money or whatever. And I can tell you, God is tickled with you and not at all judging you, person who's been told you're being judged. I can do that. That's easy to do. So that's love in action. That's faith in action. It's not imparting a certain set of beliefs.
Right. Well, and I know the TED Talk, Karen's TED Talk, it was so inspirational to me at a very critical time in my life.
Yeah.
That was 2008, and then she won the TED Prize for it. And what struck me was her comment about the Golden Rule.
Yeah.
All the major religious traditions.
Yeah.
You know, and when you were talking about the evangelical experience and so forth, I kept thinking to myself, well, what about the Golden Rule? Exactly. What about that?
That's really the plumb line. And instead, it's just become like something we just toss aside.
Mm-mm. No.
That's patriarchy.
Yeah. That's
systems, a broken systems approach.
Yeah. Susan, how do you come back? Because you have to deal with a lot of, you get a lot of work and support within the community, but then you also have to deal with, especially when you're on the vanguard, when you're out on the edge there, how do you recharge and regain your center, your peace of mind, when you've taken some hits, you've got at the back, and you know it's at the end of the exhausting day, you've had 17 speaking engagements, you've done.
It's love from my family. I really get charged up with love from my family, just hanging out with them. With alone time, I meditate. I do Qigong.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. The movement, the beautiful movement.
And it feels so free. I feel so good in my body when I do that. And I do art. I've really taken up art in a big way in the past, I don't know, 5 years or so. And I love it. So just things that really are for me. Yeah. And you really have to get over the guilt of taking time for yourself. Why in the world do we have that so deeply in our culture? But it's necessary. If I don't keep myself going, I'm no good to anybody else. You know, and the comments, I also know that the comments are only a projection. Mm-hmm. They're only that person expressing themselves. They're not me. They didn't find a beat in on me. They're just projecting themselves.
Oh, so true. You know, what popped to mind was the old Stephen Covey, you know, sharpen your saw.
Oh.
You know, what was it? Somebody famous once said, you know, if I have, you know, 4 hours to chop down a tree, I'll spend the first three sharpening my saw.
Yeah. That's great.
Mm-hmm. I've never in my life, Susan, I've never had a judgment that I've had about another person. And I'm talking about a judgment where I'm saying something about their character that it is not my character objectified. Yeah. It is not something within me that I am holding against myself. And the stronger my judgment is, the more it's my issue. Yeah. It's extraordinary when I see, it never surprises me when I see some preacher who is preaching against, so strongly against a particular behavior, a particular thing, finding that exact behavior coming in, and I go, there I am. I mean, this is so, it is so much of what we, and this is where compassion is such an extraordinary gift, because as I am compassionate for myself, I then begin to be compassionate to the world. But if I'm not, if I'm holding what I'm holding against myself, I will hold against the world.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to pick up on that. And I may be projecting here, but I have a hunch that in your books, one of them, Mom, I'm Gay, Loving Your LGBTQ Child and Strengthening Your Faith, the book True Colors, Celebrating the Truth and Beauty of the Real You.
God.
Radically Included, The Bible Case for Radical Love and Inclusion. And be the love you want to see in the world. I bet you what you were just saying, Dennis, is woven through each one of those books in some way. Can you talk about your writing?
Yeah. I mean, so I wrote the book to parents because I knew where I had been, and I know the things that get flung at them. You're just making excuses for your child. No, I'm not. I've struggled with this more than you'll ever struggle with it. I've really, you know, so what they're facing, I voice that for them and talk them down from the ledge and help them understand you're okay. You're asking the right questions. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of God, you know. But while I was writing that, I knew I wanted to write True Colors. Celebrating the truth and beauty of the real you, because that community has been so maligned by so many and told that God hates them. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I could, and I needed to unpack that for them and help them get to the core of who they are, which is beautiful and lovely and created in God's image. And so everything I write, and Be the Love, Radically Included is 49 verses of why we should be radically inclusive instead of six verses that are twisted to say we should reject people. It's like, come on now.
Yeah.
All of these books, and Be the Love You Want to See in the World, is all about how to love well, how to accept love for yourself, and then how to love others well. And I think that's my message till I stop having messages. Because that's what the world needs to hear. It's what the world needs is to embody love.
Now, I'm going to guess that those are, you can find them on Amazon.
Yes, or on our website. We actually have all the PDF downloads.
What?
Together on the website.
What is the website?
Freedhearts.org.
Freedhearts.org.
Yeah, so Freedhearts.
With an S.
Freedhearts.
.org.
Okay.
So how on the exiting the pandemic, as we begin to get this, very seldom in human history have we had a chance to come out and redo our opportunities. Yeah. This is one. This is one of those chances. How can we come out of this with the lessons we've learned and come out of this and do things in a new way? So what's in your windshield? What are you thinking about? What's on your heart and in your mind?
Yeah, I think that we should come out of this humble, knowing that if we're not one of the 500,000 people who died from COVID, Just in the U.S., yes. Then we can be grateful and come out with some humility to say, you know, our systems are really full of holes. You know, they're more like a screen that are letting so many people fall through. We need to find those stories. We need to privilege those stories and speak up for the people who need to be helped. That's what I hope our attitude is coming out. If we just double down on getting things back to normal, what that means is back to oppression.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what we don't want to do.
Yes.
Dennis, you said, I think you said, restart. I submit that it's not restart, that it's new start.
Beautiful. Hmm. Yes. And that's why we wanted to talk with you, Susan, because we need your voice. What we're seeing around the world, I mean, Chile got together and they're writing a new constitution. This is, you know, where when we're talking about where democracy, and they're talking about how autocracy versus democracy, and in Chile, over 80% voted to say that they want a new constitution and that no politician can be involved in making the new constitution, wow. The one that is in office. And not only that, they are also saying that women must be included at 50% level in all of the processes and offices and the writing of what they're doing. They did this in an entire country of what's going in South America. And so they're women are standing up around the world in so many powerful ways, and thank God you are.
Thank God. Otherwise, we're just hobbled. We're from the neck up. We cannot make what we need to happen in the world without women who know how to access their compassion and to help men access their compassion. That's exactly right. Yeah. What a gift. I hope in this country that we make some changes on our elections.
Yes.
We work it so the gerrymandering doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. So we fix the Electoral College, which I know I'm out of my league now because I'm not a political science person. But you can fix it so the electoral.
You're a citizen.
I am a citizen.
You're a citizen and you have your voice. Yeah. And your voice is what we're doing. That's why we needed you. Here, Clay, you were going to say something and I cut you off.
You did, and I forgot.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I wanted to do that. Susan, I did that.
I'm not going to say what it was.
I did that on purpose because I can see Clay. Those of us that are watching the podcast, as I can know, I know Clay well enough to know that he had something to say. And I knew that it would just, he completely forgot it. And so I just thank you. Thank you for letting me do that.
Oh, boy.
You know, it is such a blessing. It is such a blessing to know that the work that you're doing on the planet, Susan. I'm so grateful that women are allowing us to be able to come back and to grow and to be open. That mothering, that nurturing that allows us to be able to stand up and to be the men who we can be. This future that is going to be beyond the limit of my ability to imagine it, okay, is stronger, but I'm going in that direction through working with you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We have a vested interest. You know, you're half the planet. Most of us are married to one of you, so we want it to work out.
I love the idea of enlightened self-interest, is that I can get the best for me by bringing out the best in you.
Yeah, and shouldn't we all be that way? I mean, it's symbiotic. It should totally be that way. I love it. Well, I'm grateful.
Thank you. Thank you for coming with us today on this journey. Thank you for coming with us and sharing this beautiful aspect of what you're doing, Susan, and how you're doing, and your beautiful family that you're bringing in and the work that you're doing. And Clay, you are inviting me, and I want to tell just for historical and connection is that this was where I had heard of Clay for quite a while before I met him, but it was at that particular place where you two met.
Wow.
Was where I met Clay.
Oh, cool.
And that was at the university, right? At Houston. Uh-huh. It was there, and that was where I met Clay. So I was adjacent to loving you.
Oh,
at the moment when I was doing that. So I've now come a far, I feel so absolutely closing of a circle to be able to meet you, Susan.
Thank you. And it's an honor
to do that. It was such a pleasure. Clay, thank you. Do you have anything to close out this wonderful time?
I want to continue this conversation.
And we will in the after party. I encourage everyone to stick around for the after party and thank everyone. Thank everyone for joining and being part of this podcast, this journey in search of the new compassionate male. I will expect my email. I have something I want to talk with you about just to be able to say hello. Where are you in the world at the moment?
Seattle.
I saw this beautiful electric trolley that went by. And can we see Mount Rainier out? Not today, but...
it's that way.
But anyway, but thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. That's awesome.
So do you live in Washington?
Yes, we live in Seattle. We moved there actually just after the New Story Festival.
Okay.
Yeah, because our kids moved here, and so we're going to be near them.
So, anyway.
Yeah, men teaching men, that is so vital. I was thinking when you were talking about that you're right, men can get very close to their wives often. They'll share with their wives, but that's it.
Well, And still, I'm not going to speak about every man, but there's still a level that I know that I can't get to.
Things you can't talk. They won't go to the doctor usually. They, you know, you can't tell them a lot of things. I mean, that's just typical of masculinity.
No, it's just like, you know, getting lost on the highway. Are we going to turn around?
Right.
No. Prove our point.
What point are you proving exactly?
Right. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Was there anything that, we wandered everywhere on the conversation. It was wonderful. I love the energy of it. Was there anything that we overlooked?
One thing that bothers me a lot is that schools continue to tolerate bullying. That a kid can go to school every single day, they can count on the same bullies harassing them, even beating them up every day. Okay, it happens once. Okay, we didn't see that coming. But it continues. Why is nobody in there saying, we're not doing this? This is not what school is for. Why is that not happening? It's all part of the patriarchy that we don't even stop things that we know, let alone school shootings, you know.
Mm.
We wonder why that happens, but bullying happens every single day in school and nobody does anything about it. That's just, and there are programs, there are anti-bullying things, but, you know, it needs to be, every school needs to have leadership. And what should be the primary thing is keep kids safe.
Well,
the capital of Chile, that's okay. But the first thing is don't get beaten up. Don't get threatened and harassed every day.
And that goes well beyond school.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into the story, but being bullied in the work environment, in the corporate environment, it can be toxic and it's rampant.
Yep. Yes.
So, yeah.
You could start there, you know, and of course the church bullies all the time by saying who's not okay, who God approve of. All of that is bullying. You know, you have to fit this mold. So
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Sorry, I couldn't come up with anything else that we haven't talked about, but I thought we did a good job.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had fun, and I almost cried a couple of times. So,
But it's wonderful to get your little, you know, your little, your newsletter, or whatever. And I'm like, I'll listen occasionally to the speaker or whatever. And it's like, oh man, that's really good.
Yeah. It's such wonderful people from all over the world.
Yeah.
And there is a common tone to it.
Yes.
That the golden rule and compassion. Yes. And the other thing that I really truly believe that there's so many things pointing to this moment in time is truly pivotal for civilization.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
You know, I just really became conscious of this a few months ago that, you know, Copernicus stood up 500 years ago on the table and he said, hey guys, we got this wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, the earth rotates around the sun, not the other way.
Yes.
That was a fundamental, everything went back to zero.
Yes.
But that also started out the myth of progress, where you can prove it by science, and the in science and spirituality began to split.
Yeah. Yes.
And this,
because spirituality couldn't bend at all.
But before, my perception was that they could run side by side, that science would say, well, no, we can't figure it out. There's something bigger going on. That's okay.
Right.
But once we figured out that we could decide that the earth went around the sun, then no, you have to prove it by scientific fact or it doesn't exist.
Yes. And I think to add to that, we also know that the church wouldn't accept science because they didn't kowtow to the church. That
right.
Or didn't want to give up that power. So,
yeah.
All those elements probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've just this last year begun to scratch just the surface of astrology. I've gotten to know Richard Tarnas, who's one of the foremost astrologers in the U.S. His book, The Passions of the Western Mind, is required reading in over 100 universities.
Wow.
And he's been on the show. And in his books, that book, Passions of the Western Mind, and the other one, Cosmos and Psyche, you know, they talk about the planetary alignment and what has just been occurring and occurred, you know, this last year points to fundamental change. It points to really a new start happening. And I equate it to Copernicus' story.
Yeah.
I believe it's that big. It's happening now. It's not something that's going to happen. We right now today are in the midst of it. And it's all
hear all that. It really does.
Say that again.
That gives me so much hope to hear.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, because I was, before you said Copernicus, I was thinking that I had just read The Dancing Wuli Masters by Zukav.
By who?
Gary Zukav. He wrote the
Yeah.
And I read it back in college and I thought, oh, I'm going to read that again now. And it talks about how we've discovered with quarks and quantum physics that we don't know how we observe something determines what it is.
Right.
It just is it's crazy, mind-boggling. And all these things are as powerful as Copernicus and Newton and their life-changing things that they said.
Right.
But I'm going to find that Richard Tarnas. I'm going to find those books.
Oh gosh. They're right there. I have been in Cosmos and Psyche. I have been on the first 50 pages for the past 3 months.
One of those. Okay.
And it's not because it's hard to read. It's because it's so beautifully written and so energized with, I just savor going back and reading it and absorbing and going, this really, yeah.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, he's going to be back on the show in May.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I can listen to the other one too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
Thank you, Susan. It's going to be probably next week when I get this.